It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
And now we head on out to the River Islands guest line because joining us now is former Niners offensive lineman John Feliciano. No Willard today, John. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. Appreciate you coming on. As always, you can check out the Not Our Fault podcast. John and his offensive line buddies talking about all the action from around the NFL. John, what a week. What a first week of the NFL postseason. How are you? And what a Niner win in Philadelphia. Oh, and you're smoking that cigar, huh?
What a win. Yeah, this is for the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah,
I see you smirking. I see you smiling, Feliciano. I get it. My guy, Trevor Lawrence, I thought that he played well. I thought he appointed himself well, but this is the last team standing. So congrats to your Bills. I love how you come out of the woodwork when they get wins. You know, when they're losing, it's all about Brocky Poo and Shanny, but good on you. You got two of the teams left. Yep.
Yeah, I got one on each side.
Yep. And maybe they'll meet up out here in February, and it's a dream that seemed laughable for a lot of the year, but you can handle it. You can handle it.
I can't. No, I'm going to make people mad. I can't do it.
Will you wear one of those classic split jerseys, the Feliciano split Bills and Niners jersey? Thank you.
No, I'm dropping my balls. I'm going to pick somebody.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Because Joe Montana famously said in the Chiefs-Niners Super Bowl, oh, I'm happy either way. Ah, come on, Joe.
No, that's a bunch of baloney. He definitely had someone he was rooting for.
Yeah. Well, John, I got to give you credit because when you said this last week, the guys asked me to make sure we had this for the next time you came on. Unfortunately, Willard isn't here, but I want to play it. Not only did you say the Bills were going to win, but you said something about Trevor Lawrence specifically, and I know it was pointed towards Dibs, so I want to play this for you, and you can laugh more at Dibs. Here it is.
I guarantee that Trevor Lawrence has two turnovers in that game, maybe three. I guarantee it's going to happen.
And you were right. Two turnovers, including that second one, John, was the one that sealed the win for Buffalo. So you were spot on. Way to go.
Yeah, man, it's, I know a little thing, you know what I'm saying, Dibs?
When you know ball, and that's why he's puffing on a cigar.
Yeah, get to YouTube, you'd see it.
Obviously, he'd get in some significant hot water if he lit it from the misses, so we're going to go ahead and dry stogie in my face. I get it, John, I'm married.
Yeah, I'll light it up later. I got to go outside. It's way too cold right now. It's 45 degrees, I think, maybe lower.
Yeah. Crazy amount of road teams getting it done in wild card weekend, but let's talk about your boys, and in particular, Trent Williams gutting it out through the hammy. How impressed were you by the fact that they only allowed your boy Brock to get sacked once?
Yeah, great job. I know the rushing stats weren't there, but, man, it's the playoffs. They had a really good defensive line. And we did what we had to do to win. Great. I think Trent played outrageous. I mean, typical Trent stuff, but to come back from that hamstring, a player like him, most of us don't really need our hamstrings, but Trent is the exception because he's so fast and does his crazy stuff on the backside to get those runs popping. Just him being available just changes the dynamic of the team.
Can you take us a step further into that? Because obviously you put a great left tackle in there. It's going to make everybody else's life easier, and maybe specifically the guy next to him at left guard. But how does it impact the entire offensive line? Like, what does Trent's presence there mean for everybody else, the other four dudes on that offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, on one side, he's one of the smartest players I've ever played with. Just his ability to see the defense and diagnose the defense. And he's just a freaking dog. I mean, when you look around and you're about to go to battle and you see the silverback gorilla bat right there, and you're just like, yeah, I'm putting him on everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be made a little bit more difficult without George Kittle. I'm sure you were gutted when you saw that. And I mean, instantly – even a novice like me, you could see the calf flare out and you knew right away. So how much tougher does that make running the ball when you don't have your big tight end out there?
Yeah. Devastating loss. You know, I think you have the heartbeat of the offense and like Christian. And I mean, I feel like there's a lot on the offense. And then on defense, you have Fred as the heartbeat of the defense. But then you have Kittle, who is like the whole team's heartbeat. He is just a special man and a really good football player. So losing him is really going to suck. But I mean, shout out to Jake Tonjes, who has been playing very well when his number has been called. And Juice. I mean, Juice, the things he did for us last game and really what he's been doing all season. I mean, after being cut and things, like, to go out and perform the way he's been doing, he has been having probably the best season he's had in the last, you know, few years. And that's not saying his last seasons were bad. He's just playing at another level right now. So I think I'll be interested to see what they do with Juice, moving him around. And then I think Tonjes will do well when his number is called.
Former Niner offensive lineman John Feliciano with us here on Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. John, how do you, as a player, you see, as you mentioned, the heartbeat of the entire team go down, and maybe you haven't experienced this with a player of that caliber specifically, or that means that much to a team in general. But as you're playing in a game as important as that one, you see one of your key players go down. How do you as a player just like put that out of your mind and still take care of the job and the task at hand? Because I feel like it would be so easy to just be thinking about losing one of your brothers and that impacting your play going forward. How difficult is it to put that out of your mind in a game?
Honestly, you don't really – in game, you're not really thinking about that, at least an offensive line standpoint, because you just got so much things you got to worry about. It's really, you know, at half or, you know, after the game. But Kittle is just – I don't know how he does it, but the way that the positivity that he still has even after tearing his Achilles – I mean, it makes no sense. I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't know how he's so. I wish I could be as positive as that guy. But I'm sure he is just like, what are you guys crying about? Go win a game. Like I'm sure he's still involved and feeding the team in that aspect.
No doubt. And according to people I've talked to, surgery likely tomorrow, so he probably won't make the trip a couple of days after surgery. But, man, he's kind of in the heart and soul. I got to ask you about your guy, Brock Purdy, your Toyota-buying hero. What'd you make of his ability to block on that trick play? He was out there looking for somebody, John.
That's one thing about Brock. He's going to try. I remember what was it, like that 60, 70-yard run that McCaffrey had against the Seahawks when we played him at home in 23. And, you know, I was celebrating. I think me and Debo were celebrating. And Brock's over there running 60 yards downfield trying to get a block. He's a competitor, man. I mean, that throw by JJ was probably the best throw of playoff week.
No doubt. I mean, he rolls and he grips it with a glove on, and as he's about to throw it, he gets absolutely destroyed and puts it right on CMC. Yeah, we may have lost the audio.
We'll get John back. We might have lost you for a sec there, John. But you're right, dude. I mean, that was an incredible throw, and there's a funny statistic, and Justin Herbert has now played in 3 postseason games.
Yep.
Juwan Jennings, I think, has as many touchdown passes as Justin Herbert does in the postseason.
Because he's got the 2, right?
He's got 2. God. One in the Super Bowl and then one on Sunday versus the Eagles.
Yeah, and a lot fewer picks than Brock, too. So I'm not saying quarterback controversy as we work to get John Feliciano back.
Yeah, we'll get him back.
He's going to reconnect. But, yeah, that was just wild. And the fact that he was able to roll, and he's got a glove on, which – it's a tell, I guess, if you take your glove off. Maybe he likes throwing with a glove, but incredible throw as he's getting absolutely destroyed.
Oh, he got rocked.
Yep.
He got a roughing the passer penalty, which I know you guys were talking about yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know how exactly you adjudicate that when it's not a quarterback, but
I actually read the rule, and the rule is roughing the passer is provided to protect the passer, not the position.
Hmm.
So even if they, I don't know, if Shanahan got crazy and said, you know what, Feliciano, you throw the ball. You can't rough Feliciano. Is that right, John?
I guess. My UCL is still messed up, so I can't really throw the ball.
Yeah, there you go. You and Brock both.
But that was a...
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
It was a hell of a throw and a hell of a play call. I mean, what goes into a trick play like that? I know Kyle Shanahan said post game that they ran the jet sweep with Sky Moore before to set that one up. What goes into the week of practice leading up into that game? What goes into pulling off a successful trick play like that?
Yeah, well, it's not a week. I feel like that play might have been ran since when I was there. Kyle is there's always some kind of trick play that we're practicing throughout the course of the season. I think he has a bunch of those in his back pocket that he keeps, especially around that yardage and, you know, it was first down, like I think on the plus 30 or around there.
Yep.
So, I wasn't super surprised by it. I kind of, as soon as I saw the first handoff, I was like, oh no. And I saw JJ coming in, I was like, oh, they're doing it. And man, it was just a hell of a call and a hell of a pass and catch.
So when you're blocking on that, you have to kind of pretend that it's going left and then stop. And now you have to swing back right because you're actually going to pass protect. Is that basically what your job is as a lineman?
Yeah. And it's like, practicing it is like practicing screens. They're never like, it's so hard to get the right look. Like you don't know what the defensive player is actually going to do, if they're going to keep running or if they're going to, like, you know, look up and see something happening and try to cut early. So it's always like this little awkward position for a line. But you know, it all worked out.
And that was only half of it, because on the other end, you needed a running back to make an over the shoulder catch on a dead sprint. How many running backs have you played with that could make that catch that Christian did, John?
They're going to get mad, but I don't think any. I think Christian is just probably the best receiving running back I've ever played with.
It's great to bask in that one, but as you know, with a short week, you got to get ready for Seattle. When you think about what happened last time, what does the O-line in particular need to do different in order to try and get something going offensively?
You know, I really think it's being able to sustain drive is going to be huge. I feel like if we – I have tremendous faith in Saleh to make sure what happened last time doesn't happen again. And I think if – you know, I love Sam – and this is not a shot at Sam, but I think we need to make him throw the ball a bunch of times and it'll play in our favor.
Yeah, I mean, it, the way that it played out last time, just a couple of weeks ago, week 18, it was 13-3, but it really felt like the Seahawks controlled the game much more than that final score suggests. What do you feel? I mean, I know you didn't play the Seahawks when you were with the Niners in the postseason, but you were up there in Seattle for a game. I know a game in which you guys won. What is the challenge in playing in Seattle? And do you feel like that is the toughest, maybe one of the toughest places to play?
Yeah, it's up there. You're not going to hear anything. The crowd does a great job in that aspect. And if you go back to when we played them earlier in the season, it was a week one or whatever it was, the communication was not up to where we need it. And that's going to be a huge thing this week.
Gotcha. Yeah, well, we're looking forward to the game. We're looking forward to talking to you about it coming up next week. Best of luck to your Niners. Best of luck to your Bills as well. Thank you, John.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that's John Feliciano here on Willard and Dibs. No Willard today. He'll be back tomorrow, but to always appreciate John Feliciano taking some time out. And you can hear his extended thoughts on offensive line play across the entire NFL by giving a listen to the Not Our Fault podcast, where he and his a couple of his offensive line friends break down offensive line play. And there's no doubt, as you guys were talking about, offensive line going to be important for the Niners in Seattle versus the Seahawks, because they got beat across the board on the O-line by the Seahawks D-line in Week 18. If that happens again, little chance, I think, for the Niners to pull this one off.
And even in Week 1, if you go back to that game, which was up in Seattle, and they won the football game, but the yards came very difficult. They were hard yards.
Yeah.
You got a touchdown in the first half and a touchdown at the end of the game. That's it. So 8 quarters, you've scored 2 touchdowns against Seattle, including one thing that Steiny loves when you come out off that script, and I'm looking at the first drive of the season, you get the ball at your own 5 because, well, you held on the punt. This one, I don't think, was Sky Moore. He probably had a fair catch, and you held anyway. So first and 10 from your own 5. Purdy leads you down 95 yards. Kittle with the touchdown. He would get hurt later in the game.
Yep.
You scored one more touchdown to Tonjes. End of touchdowns against Seattle in 8 quarters.
Yep. Yep.
So you're going to have to find a way. And I liked what he said about sustained drives, because in this game, as I mentioned, you go 95 yards in, man, it's about 14 plays.
8.5 minutes.
And you got bailed out on a 3rd and 9 roughing the passer. Not bailed out, but Seattle was sloppy.
Yep.
They commit the penalty, and yeah, you score that one, and then you got the last touchdown to Tonjes, and that's it.
That
Other than
enough.
That, Seattle's dominated.
17-13, the final in Week 1. It was 13-3, the final in favor of Seattle in Week 18. The Niners have scored 20 points in 8 quarters versus the Seahawks so far this season. They're going to need more than 10 points, I feel pretty confident, to win this game here on Saturday. 888-957-9570. Let's go out to Tony in San Diego, who was listening in to our conversation with John Feliciano. What's up, Tony? You're on Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. What do you got?
Yeah, hey, guys. Been listening to you guys all day, and then with John Feliciano talking about, you know, sustained drives. I think from watching the games all this year, it feels like that's an easier thing to just, like, easier said than done kind of thing. And don't get me wrong, Christian McCaffrey's probably the most important player to any football team possibly in the history of football, considering how much the Niners use him and everything he does. But I just sometimes I'm watching a game and I'm like, I feel like if, and this is coming from a guy who has never played football, you know what I mean? So I'm like, can Brian Robinson Jr. not get some tougher yards? Is he not a little bigger, a little stronger, a little faster, where when he makes contact, he can still pick up that extra yard or two after contact? You know, whereas Christian, you know, he's a little smaller. He's just not going to get that extra yard or two. And maybe that's the difference between getting 4 yards and 2.5 or 3. And I feel like that's how you chew the clock, and that's how you keep the ball for 32 minutes and flip that time of possession, you know, from the last time we played the Seahawks. I'm just, you know, I don't know. I know it's crazy. I don't want to take CMC off the field necessarily, but I feel like we got to get him involved just because he's a different type of back, and it might just actually give us those sustained drives, because it doesn't do any good to have Christian McCaffrey running routes if we want to run the ball and sustain drives and chew up the clock. I don't think that's how you do that, by having him out there running routes. As awesome as it is that he can do that. So I don't know. I'm wondering what you guys think. I feel like a little extra dose of Brian Robinson Jr. might just be what, you know, gets us into that flow of the game that we typically want to have. And when we do have, we win pretty easily.
Yeah. So, Tony,
anyway, that's it, guys.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that you bring up. I was keeping an eye on Brian Robinson's snaps on Sunday versus the Eagles. And I know he only had, 7, I think, snaps in total. Yeah, he played 7 offensive snaps, which was 12% of the snaps for the Niners on Sunday. I don't know. You might know, Dibs. I don't know when the first snap came, but I feel like he might not have even played in the entire first half of this football game. It was all McCaffrey.
Yep.
And on one hand, has Brian Robinson, on average, gotten more per rush than McCaffrey this year? Yes, he has. Now, it's on a whole lot less volume. But he has generally been able to break a longer run here or there than McCaffrey. But as our callers pointed out, if you're getting Brian Robinson on the field more often and you're giving him touches, then you're taking away touches from Christian McCaffrey. And given how good he's been in general doing both the running and the receiving, I don't know, at this point when you're not saving him for anything the rest of the season, if you want to take touches away from Christian McCaffrey.
You don't. And a couple things to it, and I have been advocating for more Brian Robinson Jr. all year, and yeah. He's played 190 snaps in the regular year, which is about 11 a game. And it's just when McCaffrey waves to the sideline, I need a blow, and then he comes in.
Yeah.
And the problem with it is you don't feel comfortable throwing him the ball. So as we talked earlier about, you know, Tonjes versus Farrell. Tonjes, hey, they're going to throw it. Farrell, they're going to run it. Kittle's a two-way threat. McCaffrey, two-way threat. Brian Robinson's more of a pure runner, at least in this offense. I think he's got 8 catches on the year, 11 targets. So when he comes in, it's kind of a signal to the defense that you're most likely either going to run it or he's going to be in and pass protect
yeah.
because that's the nature of the offense. So
don't have to worry about him at all.
McCaffrey, yeah. 83% of the snaps. And I think that they've played, and it's basically 83 plus 16.92. I think they've played maybe one snap together, which is something I said earlier in the year. I'm like, play them together. Shanahan doesn't want to. He wants to play McCaffrey because McCaffrey is the best offensive player on their team, and he might be offensive player of the year.
He's
might be Jackson
votes.
Smith and Jigba. Yeah, it's going to be close between a number of 2 or 3 guys, but McCaffrey is that guy.
Absolutely. And I think that the time to try to limit his touches a little bit has come and gone. You're at the point now where you say, all right, he's our horse. We're going to give him the ball over and over and over. And this is something that Matt Barrows, who was on with Steiny and Goo earlier today, talked about. This is in general about the offense without George Kittle. And they were without George Kittle for a chunk of the early part of the season, a pretty big chunk of the early part of the season, into the middle part of the season. Here's Matt Barrows talking about maybe how the offense needs to change and get back to what they were doing earlier in the season without Kittle. Here's Barrows.
To me, it's a kind of a reversion to the first half of the season teams. I know that it's going to be Purdy and not Mac Jones, and you've got Juwan Jennings back healthy. That's going to be a big boost, but They won those games by throwing the ball a lot to Christian McCaffrey and sort of matriculating the ball down the field piecemeal, hogging a lot of a clock. So basically substituting short passes to McCaffrey for short runs by McCaffrey. So it's sort of that traditional West Coast offense. That's how you're going to have to do it.
Yeah, so maybe in general we see fewer rushing attempts and you just see McCaffrey get the same number of touches in general, but maybe it's going to be more in the short, quick passing game as opposed to in general, Purdy turning and handing it off to McCaffrey behind center.
Yeah, especially against a Seattle team where, they're going to come at you with 4 and they're going to stack up to try to stop the run knowing that you don't have Kittle and they're going to dare you to beat them through the air with the likes of Jennings, and maybe if it's Kendrick Bourne, Sky Moore, and if Purcell can actually get out there and play. Maybe DeMarcus Robinson has an encore in his bag, but Seattle's focused on one player and one player alone, and it's number 23. And, Matt Barrows with a great point. I'm looking at the Arizona game, 27 touches, 10 catches in a win.
Wow.
Seattle.
So only 13 carries.
17 carries because he had 27 for the game. He had 15
yeah.
targets, 10 catches in a win. First Seattle game, a win, 9 receptions, 22 attempts, 31 touches right out of the gate.
Yep.
We're not going to bubble wrap him.
Nope.
And 8 catches in the overtime win over the Rams and so on and so forth. So they're going to look to throw it to him and hand it to him, maybe have him throw it this weekend.
He could do it.
Yep.
He's done it before. The first start he made as a Niner, it was in L.A. versus the Rams. He had a rushing touchdown, he had a receiving touchdown, and he had a passing touchdown. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
It was down in L.A. at SoFi. It was his second game, his first start. His first game was a loss to Mahomes and the Chiefs at Levi's, but his first start as a Niner, he had the trifecta of touchdowns, rushing, receiving, and passing. So he's certainly capable of doing that.
Here's the one troubling thing, just looking at his touches. His two fewest touch games, 11 against Houston and 14 against Seattle. And those were games where you just couldn't get anything going for anybody. 11 touches against Houston.
11 touches. And how many of those were rushes?
8. And three catches.
Yeah, just 3 catches.
Seattle was 8-6. 6 catches for 34. I mean.
And the total plays they ran in that game, let's see. They only ran. Where am I looking here?
Against
Seattle?
They
only ran 42 offensive plays.
Wow.
That's the culprit. It's not as if Shanahan refused to give it to McCaffrey. It's just you weren't on the field enough to give him enough touches. And some of it is Seattle taking him away specifically in the passing game, and they deserve credit for limiting the Niners' time of possession. And their reason number one why the Niners only ran 42 plays, but if you're only going to run 42 plays, McCaffrey's not going to even come close to getting 20 or more touches. You just mathematically, it's not going to work that way.
Yeah, and it's got to be sustained drives, as John was just saying, John Feliciano. You've got to have a chance to sustain it. And I think it's as much about getting your offense in rhythm as it is protecting this defense. You can't have the defense out there chasing Charbonnet and Walker throughout long drives because you don't have as much depth without Fred and without Nick and with a really young team.
Yeah, it's. I'm excited for this game, and there's some trash talk flowing a little bit. Jaron Reed saying he doesn't like anything about the Niners. Uchenna Nwosu saying that he's going to end Fred Warner's comeback attempt. The road ends here is what he wrote on Fred Warner's Instagram post. Juices are beginning to flow just a little bit as we get ready for Niners Seahawks Part 3. Niners won Week 1, Seahawks won Week 18. Now in the divisional round, these two division foes go up against each other. Do you remember, Dibs, last week when Brian Baldinger might have maybe got himself into a little bit of hot water with some Niner fans?
That's
because
right.
Baldy's one of our favorites. Baldy breaks down games like no other, and he's on every week here on 95.7 The Game. We, though, being the resourceful radio host that we are, we also listen to some of his other conversations on other radio stations, including on WIP, our sister station in Philadelphia. And if you guys were listening last week, you probably already heard this, but I'm going to play it for you to refresh our memory. Here's Baldy on WIP in Philly last week when asked about Sirianni and Hurts versus Shanahan and Brock Purdy. Here's Baldy.
I wouldn't even be close. Sirianni and Hurts. We're talking about, you know, two guys that have been to two Super Bowls, won one, and been to other big games and been in the playoffs every single year together. Yeah, that's not even, I wouldn't even have a debate with that.
Really? You wouldn't even have a debate?
Not even a debate.
So how
one
much?
Guy's done it.
What's that?
One guy's done it. One guy's trying to do it. One guy's trying to get over the hump. One guy's trying to, when you've done it and you've been there, They never take that away. It never goes off your resume. That's what it's all about.
That is what it's all about, there's no doubt, but there's a lot more that goes into it than just winning it at the end. You can be successful but not have that ultimate prize at the very end. Well, he made his first appearance on our radio waves since then. Today, Dibs, he was on with the Joes on the Morning Roast, and the guys asked him about that, and here's Baldy defending himself in front of Niner fans. Here's Baldy.
When I was asked the question, immediately I thought Super Bowls. Sirianni and Hurts are just coming off a Super Bowl win and a Super Bowl MVP. Now, you can debate whether all the stuff about it. Is the team better? They won a Super Bowl, and a quarterback was a Super Bowl MVP. And one thing I've learned about when you win a Super Bowl, whether it's Bill Walsh winning a Super Bowl or Mike Holmgren winning a Super Bowl with Brett Favre, whatever it is, they can never take it away from you. And that's all I thought about when it was asked the question, and I was definitive.
All right, there's Baldy defending himself and why he said he would choose Sirianni and Hurts. And by the way, if you missed that full conversation, it's going to lead off Best of the Game coming up in half an hour here on 95.7 The Game as well. But do you buy that? I mean, that's what we figured Baldy would say.
That's his rationale. I don't necessarily agree with the rationale, but I buy that that's the way he was looking at it. And, you know, it's one thing. It's one metric. So they've got a Super Bowl together, coach and quarterback, and if you think that puts them above another pairing that doesn't, okay, I don't necessarily see it that way, and I don't always agree, but a lot of this we do get bogged down into the quarterback and the coach, and the quarterback gets the win. And as we saw today in Philadelphia, they fired Kevin Petullo, offensive coordinator. They didn't fire him. They've removed him from the role. So last year was Kellen Moore, rising star, now a head coach in New Orleans.
He was there for 1 year in Philly.
Right. And they won the Petullo was his passing game coordinator. Yeah. He gets elevated. It was an elevation sensation in the truest form of the word. And unlike Nick Sorensen, who had the same sort of...
Yeah, same thing.
He got the same promotion after 1 year. It's like, this ain't working, so you move on. So I do think when you look at head coach and quarterback, there's a lot more that goes into it.
Yeah, and if Baldy wants to say, well, I'm taking those guys because they've won it, like, that's fine. The question, maybe the better question I would ask, and because if that's your answer no matter what, then you just say, all right, Baldy, well, who's won more Super Bowls? Then you're just going to choose the guy that's won more Super Bowls. And that's the same answer you would get with the other question that was asked. What I would ask is, who do you have more faith in getting back there next? And that even takes into account roster. If you think Philly's more talented, then take that into account. But who do you have more? Who do you think is going to get to the Super Bowl next? Is it going to be Kyle Shanahan, or is it going to be Nick Sirianni? And I think, I mean, I would choose Kyle Shanahan in a heartbeat. I don't have much faith in Nick Sirianni as a head coach.
I think that Philly is closer to where the Niners were last year, although Philly got the Super Bowl. I think that they were in Super Bowl or bust mode this year, and the bust is going to be A.J. Brown. I don't know his particular contract situation, but I would imagine that they're going to do what they can to move off of him. I think that he's become more trouble than he's worth. And just some of the discord, and you know, we were talking to Mark Schlereth earlier, and he was talking about people, not players. You got to have the right people. And I look at this Niner team, to your point, and Juwan Jennings may not be back. I get that. But this team has an identity. They have players that play the way Shanahan wants them to play. Saleh wants them to play. They seem like a group that is all on the same page. Philadelphia doesn't. And so you had a huge step back offensively. You gained 1,000 fewer yards this year than you did last year.
Wow.
1,000.
Wow.
And last year, Saquon cooked, but your receivers were mostly whole and happy. And this
Saquon
year,
Saquon himself almost had 1,000 fewer yards.
Exactly. And so this year, you had two guys go over 1,000 in the receiving core. You had a good tight end, yet your scoring dropped from 7th to 19th. You were down 5 points a game. So something's got to change in there more than just the coordinator.
Yeah. But then the question becomes, all right, if you're Kyle Shanahan, and I don't mean to get ahead of ourselves because there's a gigantic game coming up on Saturday, but who is the next Niners defensive coordinator? Because you could be looking at a spot where maybe something similar happens as to Nick Sorensen a couple of years ago, and you feel really bad about that defense again, and not that it's going to mean a whole lost year, but there is like, all right, Kyle's got a big decision to make this offseason because very, very likely Saleh's going to be gone and he'll be head coach of another team. Maybe it's Baltimore, maybe it's Atlanta, who the hell knows? But that's a decision that Shanahan's going to have to make at some point too.
Possibly this year, and it seems more and more with all these openings that, you know, Saleh, you would figure if he wants one of these jobs, he can get one of these jobs. And with Pittsburgh becoming open, doesn't that seem like a great fit? Like Robert Saleh and his... He's a tough guy. They have a tough defense, and Pittsburgh's that kind of town. That feels to me like a great fit. I don't know if you want to be the guy to follow a legend, and Mike Tomlin is that. And Pittsburgh's only had three head coaches, I believe, in my lifetime. And I'm kind of an old guy, Grandy, 57. I think that Chuck Knoll started in about 68 when I was born.
I'll find it for you.
It's right in there he started. And then, of course, Bill Cowher was there a long time, and now Tomlin for almost two decades. So if you get the Pittsburgh job, it feels like you're going to have it for a long time.
Wow. Chuck Knoll took over in 1969.
So there was one coach when I was just a wee little dibber.
Bill Austin from 1966 to 68, and then Chuck Knoll in 1969.
I couldn't wait to get Austin out, as I recall.
Bill Austin was... Let's see, where are the wins here? Bill Austin, in his career, was 11-28. Also three ties.
Yeah, unacceptable.
Yeah. Then Chuck Knoll won 193 games. Bill Cowher, 149 games.
Four bowls for Chuck, too.
Yeah, and then Mike Tomlin, 193 wins, tied with Chuck Knoll. I didn't realize they're tied for wins as head coach of the Steelers, but they're like the Green Bay Packers quarterbacks. They go through one for 15 years, and they stick with them forever.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, I heard John Harbaugh's name thrown out as a possible replacement of Mike Tomlin. You stay interdivision, and you just bounce over to Pittsburgh. That would be a nice double guns middle finger to Baltimore for getting rid of you. But I do think that there are a few attractive jobs out there, and if Saleh gets one, he might take Clay Kubiak with him. He might take Gus Bradley with him to be his defensive coordinator.
Maybe he reunites with Mike McDaniels, who got fired from Miami.
Yep.
Maybe they go head coach, offensive coordinator somewhere together and,
a lot of
and build off the Shanahan tree together.
I do think that if Saleh gets a job, he's probably taking somebody with him. But again, you have to, if you take somebody with you, they have to get a promotion in order for them to get approval, I think, in order to take that job. And
so
I don't know
Kubiak if, technically couldn't take the offensive coordinator then?
I'm not sure if he is officially the offensive coordinator.
He is.
Yeah, so I don't
There
I don't
was
know
a whole thing.
Works.
Shanahan got into trouble in the offseason for saying we elevated him to the offensive coordinator spot because by rule, when there's an open spot, you have to interview for it, and you have to obviously satisfy the Rooney rule and all that. But Shanahan, they didn't interview for anybody. They just, you know, elevated Kubiak, so then after Shanahan said that they had to technically open the position and hold interviews only to then hire Kubiak. So he is technically and officially the offensive coordinator, but I don't know how that works with maybe him leaving and going somewhere else.
I'm just looking at it here where if he's under contract, he can take a lateral move with the permission of the team.
Oh, well, they'll give him permission.
Of course. Yeah. But I do think that when this season eventually ends, hopefully it's not for a while,
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
To be a candidate, and then you're going to have to, again, rebuild the staff. But that's a good thing. When you're Kyle Shanahan and you have a staff of really good coaches, they're going to leave and get promotions and just go on and find the next guy.
Yeah, it's a sign of a healthy organization.
Yep.
You'd rather have it that way than the other way. You don't want people that nobody else wants because that means you have bad people. And maybe the reason why people want the Niners people is because they're under Kyle Shanahan. But generally, he's done a pretty good job. The last couple of DC hires before Saleh haven't been great. But, you know, D'Amico Ryans was a great promotion, and getting Saleh back obviously was huge. I'm sure they'll be willing to offer him a blank check to keep him around, but I don't think it's going to be about money. It's going to be about status and that title for Robert Saleh.
Yeah, going out and getting another crack at it, but, you know, still work to do in Seattle first, and you go out there and, you know, Saleh, you know, is going to have the defense as ready as possible.
I mean, it is pretty amazing what the defense has done. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but they gave up 38 to Chicago, and that was just a barn burner. It was offense both ways. It was big plays, very few stops in that entire game. And then since then, you take on two teams with a lot of offensive talent, not offensively like amazing either the Seahawks or the Eagles, and specifically not the Eagles. They have so many problems, although they do have a lot of talent on that offense. But you hold Seattle to 13 points. I don't care how you got there. You held them to 13 points somehow, and you held the Eagles to 19 points. Like I would have, if you set the line at those totals for those defenses or those offenses versus this Niner defense, I would have said, oh, easy over. Those teams are scoring more than 13 and 19 points versus this Niner defense. Somehow, some way, and it's why he's so attractive on the head coaching market, somehow, some way, Robert Saleh has a relative no-name defense led by Diamador Lenore as, you know, the best player on the defense, a bunch of rookies, and a couple of linebackers signed off of the streets a month ago, and they're holding their own in postseason environments on the road. It is absolutely amazing what Robert Saleh has done.
Yeah, with a young team and a bunch of cast-offs, and they were 22nd in yards per play allowed, yet 13th in points allowed. So the whole bend but don't break, it's a cliche, but when you look at the Niners, and we talked about this last hour, they were one of the best teams at having the other team miss field goals, which helps your points allowed. When you play bend but don't break, and then the other team misses 11 field goals, that's pretty nice. That's rewarding.
And like, where is the Niners' defense in terms of opponent third down conversions? Because I know the Niners' offense is best in the NFL converting third downs. I think there's been some high-profile misses for the Niners defense. I think of that third and 17 against the Seahawks. But it largely feels like Dibs, in some of the bigger moments, when they've needed to stop, whether it is a third down or it's once the opponents get into the red zone or it is, you know, forcing a field goal instead of, you know, allowing another first down, they have gotten the stops when they've needed them in those big moments. And that's part of the bend but don't break defense. And it's kind of what Schlereth was talking about with us earlier as well. If you're just solid tackling, you're going to, you know, maybe give up some yards, but you're going to force opposing offenses to have to execute over and over and over. And long enough, you do that long enough, a defense or an offense will shoot themselves in the foot and you'll get a stop as a result.
Yeah, they're 14th in third down defense percentage. Last year they were 25th.
Yeah, so big, big difference.
Yes.
And the personnel's gotten worse.
Right.
So that's all Robert Saleh.
Exactly. Well, it's Robert Saleh, and it's also, I think, the position coaches coaching up these young players, because the majority of these younger guys they've gotten better. They've played a lot. They've gotten better. One troubling sign on third down defense, number one, the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, so this is number one third down defense versus number one third down offense.
Right. They give up 32%. On third down, and the Niners in the last meeting, 2 for 9, 22%.
So the Seahawks won that matchup.
Yep.
We'll see what Saturday has in store. That's going to be one of the tails of the tape, as they say, in that one as well. All right. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And while you're there, make sure to check out what Brian Baldinger said about the Niners' win over the Eagles in Philadelphia. We just heard a little piece of that conversation, plus the full thing on the morning roast with Spadoni and Shasky. That's going to lead off Best of the Game in about 20 minutes right here on 95.7 The Game as well. For now, time for a break. When we come back, we can talk a little bit more about Kyle Shanahan and the job that he's done. Plus, we got time for your calls if you want to weigh in at 888-957-9570. Time for a break. Willard and Dibs back with one more segment. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. Back with more next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
I'm not a doctor, so it's questionable. Questionable concern.
All right.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard today. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. Willard had jury duty today. He'll be back tomorrow. Laugh at Willard's expense. I like it.
I mean, yeah, jury duty. You got to do your duty. Just in case you need a juror, you got to go out there and do it. But
when was the last time you had jury duty?
Oh, must have been 2007. It's been a long time. Yeah, I moved around a little bit. I was in Oakland, and then now I'm out through the tunnel, and haven't found me yet. But
hopefully they don't.
None. Just, I usually postpone it a couple times, and then they find me, and then you go. You just go. Sometimes you call, and they say, no, we don't need you.
Thank God.
And then you get like 3 to 5 years or whatever off the list. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, I have not been called yet. I'm kind of dreading the day that it eventually happens, because it will eventually happen.
Well, and you're here in the city, so, I mean, you might, if you get impaneled on a jury, you could find a fun case. All kinds of stuff going on here in the big city.
One of the benefits of living here, maybe I'll be on a high-profile case. Maybe I'll, you know, be interviewed.
Yeah, but you don't want to be on a long jury trial, and you don't want to be sequestered.
Yeah, you're tied up, and you can't do anything.
You can't have your device. I can't imagine you millennials if you're sequestered with no phone.
I could not live.
You want me to read a book? The hell's wrong with you, bailiff?
I can hardly even read.
I'm out.
Right? No phones, no TV, no newspapers. Just you and the crossword puzzle.
No way to communicate with the outside world.
Right. Because, you know, they don't want people, you know, people
influencing
like me.
Influencing your opinion.
Randy, the, you know, the public's against your, you know, the public thinks it's guilty.
He's definitely guilty.
Don't, no doubt. So, yeah. Sequestered is, you know, fairly rare, but you catch a long trial and you could be doing a stretch yourself in the box.
Yeah. No, I do not want that. I do not want that at all.
And the thing is, too, if you're on a jury, I never have been, but when you go to jury duty, the instruction is pay attention. You got to take notes. You got to pay attention.
Yeah, it's like a job.
Totally. You can't nod off.
You have time off from your job, but it's just another job and you don't get paid as much
for
it.
You don't get paid
really
at
all.
Yeah. So it's brutal. But
yeah, I do not.
You do your civic duty.
Yeah, whatever. I don't want to be a part of that. Not the civic duty part, just that part of my civic duty.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'll do my other civic. I'll vote. You know, I'll do everything else.
Can you volunteer here when the company does pick up the trash day on Earth Day?
Uh-huh.
You're always out there.
That's my Odyssey one thing, is helping out the environment on those days.
Yeah, you're awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
By the way, I was thinking about this earlier, Dibs. We're talking about how I haven't been alive for another Super Bowl. I'm turning 30 this year, and I don't mean to keep bringing that up specifically.
Begging for presents already. We're about 4 months away.
My half birthday was a couple months ago, and I know you celebrate half birthdays, so I'm mad at you that you missed it. But thank you. But I was thinking earlier, and the Brock Purdy come from behind postseason win stats kind of got me thinking. I think Brock Purdy, in terms of Niner quarterbacks that I like can actively remember watching, and for me that really begins with Jeff Garcia, because I obviously Steve Young, while he won that Super Bowl before I was born, he was the Niners quarterback while I was born and for a few more years after I was born. But I don't remember watching Steve Young quarterback the Niners, so he's not on the list for me in terms of Niners quarterbacks that I can remember watching. For me, it begins with Jeff Garcia. And you have Jeff Garcia, then you have a lot of garbage for a while. Then you have Alex Smith. You have some garbage mixed in there. Then eventually you get Colin Kaepernick, and then you get some more garbage mixed in there, and then Jimmy Garoppolo, and now Brock Purdy. I think in my lifetime, Niners quarterbacks that I can remember watching, Brock Purdy is the best Niner quarterback of my lifetime that I can remember. And it sounds kind of crazy to say that, but I think, honestly, it's true.
You could back it up, too, and look at Jeff Garcia was awesome, and some great runs with Mariucci, but Brock Purdy, as I mentioned earlier, in just his fourth year, now four postseasons, he's got five playoff wins already, and that stacks up against some of the all-time greats as far as what they did in their first four full seasons as a starter. So he's off to a great start, pun intended, and he's got an amazing coach who is around him, who's not going anywhere. And it looks like, to me, this team is trending not all the way up, because Trent is old and now George is hurt and Juwan probably is gone and Christian's getting up there. So you're going to need to turn over a lot of this, but Brock looks to be the real deal.
Yeah, and you got Brock and you've got Kyle Shanahan. Like, those are the building blocks that any NFL franchise would want: a head coach that you absolutely believe in, and then a quarterback that you trust. And if you are a team that you're right, maybe it's kind of beginning not a reset, but you're kind of in the process of kind of closing the door on one group of players and then kind of starting again, but with the quarterback still intact, like, you could only dream of having the duo the Niners have, which is Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy. And something that we were talking about off the air early is, all right, consider quarterback head coaching duos across the NFL in the playoffs, in the NFC playoffs right now. Like, it's Kyle Shanahan and Brock Purdy at the highest level, maybe along with McVay and Stafford, and maybe there's a couple of others you would include in that conversation. But, like, Shanahan and Purdy are pretty high up that list in terms of those two guys at those positions across the entire NFL.
Yeah, and you could look at McDermott and Josh Allen and say, yeah, I mean, that's great. McDermott's been there, and Allen is maybe the best player in football, but they haven't achieved what Purdy and Shanny have in almost a similar, actually, I think Josh Allen's been there longer than Purdy. So
McDermott, same offseason he was hired as Shanahan.
Same as McVay. Yeah. And, Stafford's getting up there as well, and they've done what Purdy and Shanny haven't. But you start thinking about the future, and Purdy's $53 million about to kick in. It's going to be up to Shanahan and Lynch to, over the next 3 to 4 to 5 years, as all these Hall of Famers age out and retire, and Kittle, unfortunately, going to be gone for a while with that injury, and Bosa, a third ACL. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to do a lot with your roster to figure out how to surround Brock with talent.
Yeah. It's time for our engaging Dub Nation Twitter poll results. Engagement is everything on the court and in life. Vote in our engaging Dub Nation poll on the 95.7 The Game Twitter page before every game, presented by Shane Co., your friend and jeweler. Earlier, we asked, Steve Kerr has committed to the starting lineup of Curry, Moody, Butler, Green, and Post for about a month now. Should the Warriors stick with that lineup or change it up? And all of you guys have voted. 55% disagrees with you, Dibs. They say change it up, while 45% is on your side, stick with it. But 55% say change it up, get rid of that starting lineup, give it a slight change. Steve Kerr, we don't have starting lineups for tonight's game just yet. The game tips off at 8 against the Blazers, so whenever we do get it, of course, we'll let you know on 95.7 The Game. I would venture to guess that Steve Kerr is going to continue with this starting five, and it's kind of the chicken or the egg, Dibs. Do you get consistency because a group earns it, or can you kind of force consistency by just sticking with something? And maybe Steve Kerr is trying to force that consistency to take root.
Yeah,
because he's just sticking with it, even though the results haven't been great so far.
Well, the results have been wins. 13 of the last 14 has been this lineup. The only one that wasn't was the We Sit 'em game against OKC, and they're 8-5 in those 13. So plus minus me all you want. This lineup has started, and they've won more than they've lost.
And they better win tonight. We'll just put it that way. You jokingly said it's a must win.
Yeah.
But you look at the injury report for Portland and your injury report. This is a game that you absolutely should win. Denny Avdia is out. The Blazers down a number of other key players as well. And only player that's out for the Warriors is Seth Curry. And that's not going to change for a while.
So Kuminga's also out.
Not officially.
Right.
He's available on the bench. But yes, I don't think he's going to play tonight, Dibs. If you notice, the Warriors got blown out versus the Hawks, and there was lots of garbage time in that game, and there was only one player that was active that did not play. I bet you can guess who.
Yeah, Kuminga.
Exactly.
He by the time JK Day hits on Thursday, it will have been 4 weeks since he last played. This is now day 26.
Really? Is that Phoenix game? That's been 4 weeks?
Yep, he played 9.5 minutes, and then
he has missed like
12 straight games. Including an inactive, a few did not plays, and a did not dress. The old DND we don't talk a lot about.
Yeah, so he was sick for one game.
Right, inactive.
And then the one where maybe he didn't want to play.
OKC.
So that was the OKC game.
Did not dress.
And then all the others were DNP CDs, as in he was available, but Steve Kerr did not choose him.
Did not dress. I'm picturing him in his pajamas in the locker room. Sorry, Steve. I just didn't get dressed today.
Yeah, unavailable. Right. Sorry, can't go on this one. Anyway, Warriors basketball is coming up in an hour. I'm going to dip on out of here and sprint to Chase Center so I can take the air again in an hour at 7 o'clock
for
Warriors Live. Until then, what's coming up on the game? Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Stop. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It is Best of the Game run by Lucas Alexander. We've got Baldy coming up next, I believe. What else? What else after Baldy?
May I talk?
Yeah.
Thanks. Stink in the second half.
What do you mean, may I talk?
You told me to stop blooping you.
Stop blooping me. You can talk. But yeah, okay. So Baldy and then Stink. That's Best of the Game. And then I'll be back for Warriors Live coming up at 7. I'll be live from Splash. You can stop by and say what's up beginning at 7 o'clock. For Dibs, for Lucas behind the glass, for Steven behind the glass, I'm Grandy. Thanks so much. It's been fun, Dibs.
Yep.
Willard back tomorrow. Have a great night, and I'll talk to you in an hour on 95.7 The Game.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. 2 new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.